My naive head, like going to the gym with a trainer, was just running on a running machine. But obviously, it's so much more, and I've learned loads.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. Well, so far in Forever Young, we have been in conversation with a great number of health and medical experts in their field, ranging from sleep to heart health, nutrition to mental well-being. And along the way, we occasionally also speak to those in the public eye from other walks of life, giving us a fascinating insight into their lives, and in particular, how keeping fit, well, and active has helped them as they juggle their careers and workload. Which all leads me to our very special guest today, the British designer and bespoke tailor, Joshua Kane. Known for his cutting-edge suits and imaginative style, Joshua's rebellious approach to the art of tailoring has captured the heart and imagination of fans and A-list celebrities alike, dressing international icons for the red carpet and stage, such as Ozzy Osbourne, Rod Stewart, and Tom Holland, to name but a few. Welcome to the show, Joshua Kane.
Thank you so much. That introduction was so fabulous. I feel like I need to go back and rewrite my bio now after that introduction.
Well, look, welcome, Joshua. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
And particularly after we had to cancel 2 weeks ago. I know you weren't very well. So how are you today? Most important question.
Well, my voice is probably back to about 80%, whereas I think 2 weeks ago it was on about 6%, where I could barely even order a coffee and press. So, you know, it's getting better. But the nature of the beast is I never stop talking and I never stop fitting people and I'm always doing something. So getting a chance for my voice to recover is never easy.
And I know it's your birthday tomorrow,
it is,
in fact.
It is indeed. It is 37 tomorrow.
Very good. 37 years young. And, well, this podcast will be released on the morning of your birthday.
Oh, fantastic.
There you go. That's a good start to the day. But look, lots to talk about today, including your own health and well-being choices. But before we do so, maybe there are those listening who are maybe less familiar with your world. And career achievements as a bespoke tailor. So would you like to share with us your story?
Yeah, of course. Which version would you like? Long, well, short, or intermediate?
The honest version, and we can beep over any swear words.
Okay, great. The story can be quite long, but I'll try not to to waffle on too much. And if I do, just, you know, just warn me. But I started my own company about 8 years ago in my bedroom. But prior to that, I was a bespoke tailor, trained as a bespoke tailor, graduated from Kingston University, where I trained as a BA fashion designer. And then, yeah, trained as a bespoke tailor in my spare time, obviously graduated. Then I moved to New York and I worked for Brooks Brothers in New York, which was my first job, before coming back to the UK and working for Jaeger Menswear. Doing about 3 or 4 years there before then going to Burberry Prorsum and designing the runway collections with the likes of Christopher Bailey, who was a creative director and CEO at the time, before then going to work for Sir Paul Smith for 4 years before eventually starting my own business. So yeah, I finished working for someone else. I decided that my suits were... I was making the spare time for myself were getting so much attention from other people that maybe I should take a shot and start my own company, which was really how I started. I always made my own suits because I loved expressing myself through my clothing. And I just sort of got a bit well known for dressing a bit differently. And so many times I'd be out at events and people would ask me like, where do I get that suit from? And I said, oh, I made it. And they would be like, no, but actually, where's it from? And I said, but I actually did make it. And I would take business cards and they would ask, can you make me one? And I obviously said, no, I'm working for someone else. I have no time whatsoever. I'm only working 7 days a week. The fashion industry is very, very relentless. And then when I started my own company, I just went through the top drawer in my dresser, through all those old business cards. And I said, you know, remember that suit that you wanted making? I now have a bit of spare time if you'd like to come and visit. And that was really my first, my first series of bookings and appointments. I made up a fake email address that was an assistant that didn't exist. So I looked slightly more professional. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Ironically, no one ever met her.
What was her name? Out of interest?
Kat.
Okay, Kat. That's your alter ego.
Yeah, exactly. Kat still comes out every now and then.
at weekends.
Yeah, so that's how I started. And then fast forward and 8 years later, I got my own store about 6 months after working from home. I took a short let on a little shop in Spitalfields in East London. Mm-hmm. And that became a short let of a week where I wanted to hire it for the space for a week. End up becoming 3 years. And then I moved into W1 where we have the store at the moment.
Well, that's great. And those are rock solid foundations, actually, listening to all of that. And maybe can I ask, what was it like working for Sir Paul Smith, who clearly has achieved so much as a British designer himself as well?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just really incredible and an amazing human being. Such an amazing opportunity for me to sort of work under someone who's done it all. And from going through the fashion industry to running his own business and just being a really lovely, humble gentleman, it was really incredible just to sort of see all of that take place.
And do you consider him as a mentor today as well, or are there others you look up to?
I wouldn't say, definitely someone to look up to, but I wouldn't necessarily use the word mentor. I think that would sort of more imply that I was still in touch with them and I'm not, but an incredible experience and opportunity for me to work there.
Incredible. And actually, you've given us a flavor already, but you've clearly worked very hard to get to where you are today.
Very relentlessly my own company has only been 8 years, which is relatively nothing, but 7 days a week and probably 20 hours a day without over-exaggerating, sometimes longer than 20 hours a day. On the build-up to shows and events where we literally tirelessly work through the night, it feels like double than 8 years. Let's put it like that.
It reminds me of the what's the saying? It takes years to become an overnight sensation.
I like that saying a lot. I like that a lot.
And obviously you're right. You work to deadlines, and there's clearly an amount of stress that comes with that. What have you learned about your own character in times of adversity or under pressure generally?
I think from my experience, I've just sort of been molded to have an incredible resilience, like that ability to get up and keep going on no sleep under huge amounts of pressure and adrenaline. I think the resilience and the finding a way to always meet the deadline one way or another is something that all of those experiences have taught me. And that's just sort of inherently inbuilt in me now, that I always meet the deadline one way or another.
And presumably you have a team working with
you? Yeah, we've got a very small team, actually. We're probably only five full time. And post COVID, the stores moved to appointment only, actually, which is a transition I never thought I was going to make. We used to have three members of retail team on the shop 7 days a week. And then post COVID, it was more just obviously for health and safety, appointment only, one customer in the store at a time. And then we found our customers loved it so much, being the only person in the store and feeling really, really special and booking an appointment, that we actually stuck that way. And it's been a business changing decision. I never would have done if it wasn't for COVID, because I always felt like the anxiety that the shop has to be open, people have to be welcomed. But actually what we found is people feel more welcome being welcomed in one at a time and having a private appointment. And it means we're never interrupted mid-fitting, and it means just people just have a much better experience. And from a business perspective, we actually found our appointment to sale ratio just sort of doubled, because, I guess it just sort of siphons out people that just want to have a look around, which they're still welcome to do by appointment, but it just means people do their research a little bit more and take their fittings, I don't know, perhaps a little bit more seriously, which is lovely for me, because I love really spending time with people that have thought about the suit they want to have made, or the ready-to-wear suit they'd like to order, or anything in between.
And the fact they have gone to the trouble to make that appointment means they're more qualified as a potential customer.
Yeah, exactly. I think it just means they're a bit more passionate about what they're going to do with their time, rather than just sort of like walking past the shop because and then wandering in because they've got an hour to kill. Well, you know, which is also fine. It's a way to work. But I think as I explore new ways to explore the luxury market and find ways where customers can experience something new, I find in a more controlled setting and environment, we can do that. And for example, when someone's making an appointment, we don't just book them in. We say, have you visited the online store? Is there anything that you're looking for? Is there a particular style off the website you'd like to see? So it allows us to curate their fitting in a much more organized fashion, which gives them a better experience. And for me, that's where high-end luxury is, the potential it has to go is to know your customer before they come in. And then that way they feel even more unique.
That is one important way to differentiate, isn't it? Is just to make it so highly personal.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I love to do. I always like to think is the shop is like my living room, and I'm just hosting someone in my living room and showing them a good time. And the narrative is normally around clothes. However, the shop has turned into a bar every now and then. So, you know.
I like the sound of this. I'll be making an appointment after this podcast.
Welcome to.
So, actually, I have a question on COVID. Interested to hear, as a business, your experience through such a challenging time. I imagine with everyone locked away, it was more challenging and less demand for bespoke fitted tailoring,
yeah,
would you say?
I mean, of course, it was a terrible, terrible run. Anyone in any form of retail or fashion or even indeed entertainment would be able to tell you that. It was a terrible run. However, we weren't completely quiet. We do have a growing demand for wardrobe design for movies from anyone from Hollywood to Netflix to ITV. That I'm really fortunate to design. So I design a lot of things for on screen. And actually the amount of time where production on TV and film stopped was a lot smaller than say events, for example. So people were still needing costumes for filming, although filming production was on a bare minimum, but it was still happening for a lot of the lockdown. So, we were working on some things for some films and movies and Hollywood shows that are coming out right at the beginning of next year. So it's usually around sort of 12 month lead time. So that was really fun. That was really creative. It gave me a good opportunity to still keep designing, still keep the characters in mind, the designs in motion. And it also gave us a great opportunity to sort of, I don't mean literally take stock, but sort of metaphorically take stock of where the collections were going, what the emphasis on what we were doing is, how we can increase our customer experience, how we can grow our network, how we can collaborate with more people. So, you know, I tend to always fall on the positive side of things. And there were many positives that came out of COVID. And it's really, as a designer, I feel like actually creatively, I'm better for it because that opportunity to slow down. And like I said, I've been working incredibly long hours for a long period of time. That opportunity to slow down actually allowed me to step into some other areas of design I wouldn't probably had time to step into at that point in my career. So yeah, actually a lot of positives came from it creatively.
No, that sounds fantastic. And yes, it sounds like you've reflected and used the time strategically as to what areas to take your business.
Exactly that.
Very good. You've been described as a rule breaker and challenging the status quo. Would you agree with that? And maybe give us some examples.
I mean, 110%. I think you have to. I think I've never wanted to follow rules. I inherently see limitations within rules that I like to break, and I think that comes from my design ethos as well. You know, you like as a tailor, I was trained a certain way to make things, and that's great. And that was one person's version of how to make things. And then I was always taught once you know the rules, then you know how far you can break them. And I think that's so important to keep the design evolution going, you know, and to keep, from a tailoring point of view, to keep that going, it needs to keep changing and needs to keep evolving. Otherwise, it's not current. And if it's not current, it'll eventually die out. And I think if the suit does not evolve and the way that the suit is designed and worn doesn't evolve, then it will cease to be relevant in the not too distant future. And I think that was always been my approach, to keep pushing and changing something I love so much, so it maintains. Examples of that would be, I don't know, I think probably everything.
Well, you've got a very distinctive look, first of all.
Well, exactly. I guess the proof's in the images. And I could give you so many different examples, just from the way that we make a suit to the way that we're a fully vertical design house. So I design and weave every single fabric in the collection, in every single suit, all fabrics woven in England and everything tailored in London. And that might not sound rule breaking, but it's the way that we approach fabrics and textiles is very, very, I would say, avant-garde, because I want the suit is the first thing that you see and the first thing that the brain looks at is the fabric, the color, the texture, the pattern, before you're looking at the shape of the silhouette. And I think to own our own fabrics, rather than a lot of other design houses where if you want to get a suit made, you're presented with stock books of fabrics that every other, say, Savile Row bespoke house has to offer. But we just don't do that, because I always think that tailoring should reflect someone's personality. It's what you are on the inside, worn on the outside. And what you are on the inside is not the same as everyone else. So your fabric should have the opportunity to represent that without going too deep in it on a Monday.
No. Yes, on a Monday morning. But looking at your cuts, they seem, you know, from a distance, looking at and the research that I've done, you seem quite classic nonetheless, but there is a flourish and a twist that you like to add, and that's the personality side of things you maybe just refer
to. I would agree. I mean, we have several more classic suit shapes for customers that just want really beautiful colors and patterns and fabrics. But then we do a lot of things that they walk the line between like couture costume and high-end fashion. And I love that. You know, I'll always dip in back into the 18th century and pick up like frock coat pattern shapes and tail coat shapes, because I love it. It's theater, it's drama, and it's exciting. And I feel like every day should have a bit of theater in it. You know, you'll find me on a Friday night just like running around in a tailcoat somewhere having a blast. But I love it. It's not for everyone, but like, again, that's just a bit of my personality or eccentricity that I like to let out.
Yes, that really does come across. The industry itself, before we'll move on to your health and well-being, which I know will be really interesting to everyone. But the rise of bespoke clothing, have you seen that yourself? The industry itself is a bit of a crossroads, isn't it, with fast fashion. It's not sustainable, is it? And are people now more prepared to invest in an item that they will keep for years, as opposed to this, you know, fast fashion approach with some of the high street chains?
I would completely agree with that. I think we've seen a big trend, and especially coming out of lockdown, and people wanting to invest in quality, people wanting to invest in luxury, people saving up and trading up their purchase as an investment of something that they can wear and keep forever, and also makes them feel amazing. Like, you have to remember, we spent a year and a half in pajamas on our sofa on Zoom calls, basically.
Mm, yes.
And no one put a suit on in so long that now I feel like London's alive again, and everyone's kind of wanting to look in their mirror and feel amazing about themselves and kind of showcase themselves, you know, whether they're going out or booking that wedding that they finally have to not rearrange for the third time after multiple closures. And I think, you know, it's a really great time for people to kind of like rediscover themselves and dress up again and enjoy themselves.
Mm, so true. And actually, you mentioned lockdown. Maybe a few of us are cuddlier as a result and put on a bit of weight during the last year and a half. So let's maybe move on.
I find it goes one way or the other. Some are, but then some people just went on crazy home health and fitness routines to keep themselves occupied. So it really does go either way.
Did you manage to keep fit and well during the last year and a half?
Probably not at the beginning, but towards the end, I definitely was searching for something else to do at the end, you know, in terms of exercise. I'm an avid skateboarder. So as soon as we were allowed to sort of go outside again, I dusted off my skateboard, which is like an actual incredible workout, skateboarding, if you're doing it to a high enough standard. It's probably closest to rowing in the fact that it does every upper body and sort of lower body muscle all at the same time.
Yes, and we all fell in love with skateboarding this summer, didn't we? The Olympics and Sky Brown, I think.
Yeah, shit. Incredible athlete. Yeah, it's very strange that skateboarding as a sport and a culture is suddenly having like what I would describe as a second coming after being present for so long. Now it's big business and it's big competitive money business. So it's getting a lot of marketing.
And is that something you've done all your life, skateboarding?
I got my first skateboard when I was about 9 years old, and I've not put it down since.
I see the skateboards appear occasionally in your photos.
Yeah. I always like to bring it in. It's part of who I am, and I think it ties back into kind of that rebellious side of me that I love, and that goes with skateboarding. The whole concept of skateboarding was it's a rebellious sport. I mean, it was borderline illegal when it started. Kids in America breaking into houses to use their empty pools to skateboard. It has a inherently rebellious side to it, and I love that about it, and I think it definitely reflects a big part of my personality.
In fact, the skateboards I've seen in your shoots are highly designed, presumably by you.
Yeah.
Is that something you would do for Sky Brown? Why don't you design a skateboard?
I mean, I would love to, but I feel like the Nike endorsement and sponsorship might I believe that might conflict slightly for some contracts. But hey,
true,
if she's
true,
listening, given the opportunity, we can make a beautiful polka dot or hamster skateboard from the collection.
We'll send this podcast on to her people. And the other interesting fact about you and your background, you were, well, football is also a game you like to play, and you did play to a very high level at one point.
Tell us about that. My father got me playing football from a very, very young age. And I played for several teams, but I played through all through the semi-pro levels up and then I was training with Fulham as well up until the point where I stopped playing, which was incredible. I mean, I loved playing football, and I sort of actually started playing again a little bit more recently. But I didn't play for about 10 years after I stopped playing when I was about 21. And that it was a strange thing for me, because I always loved football. But as it got more serious, I also was very conflicted, because I was an artist and a designer and training to do that. And I felt like it was just another person in me. I felt like I had a split personality disorder, because there was the football side and the art side. And one was just always fighting with the other to get more time doing one of the other activities. Football occupied so much time, but then so did art and fashion as I was beginning to fall in love with it as a young man. And I just had to make a choice. There was not enough time to do both.
And at Fulham particularly, was the training, give us an insight into the training. Was it as advanced as it is now in terms of keeping well and structured?
I don't think anyway. I mean, I see that the way that the young boys and girls are now trained at that level, and it's incredibly technical. But not to say that it wasn't for us back then, but it's a lot. How do I say it? It feels a lot more serious now, whereas back then it was a lot of gym, a lot of training. And I was a goalkeeper, so I actually trained more with the ball and on the ground than a lot of the other players. Where they were doing a lot more sort of distance and a lot more like cardio work, where I was always just rolling around in the mud, just picking up balls.
So if Fulham, let's just dream show, if Fulham got to the FA Cup final, you'd be the perfect choice to make their suits, no, on Cup final.
Well, actually, I've wanted to do a football team's suit for about 2 or 3 years. I really want to do that, because I think that would be so cool to have a British tailor do a British team suit. It would be a perfect connection. And like, I know a lot of footballers, and they're generally people that love to kind of dress up and express themselves, And when I was at Paul Smith, actually, we did have the contract for Manchester United. So I actually designed and tailored the Man United football team for a year, which was a lot of fun. So I went up to Old Trafford and I met like Ronaldo and Schmeichel. Like he was like a player. I think he was the goalkeeper coach at the time. So I met a lot of and tailored Brian Giggs and Sir Alex Ferguson. So that was a lot of fun.
Great. You said you still play or you're...
I just recently started picking it up again, actually. I played just before lockdown started. I played on the pitch at Goodison Park for a charity kind of sort of testimonial charity match thing with a lot of old famous Everton and Liverpool players. So that was a lot of fun. It was a 90-minute game. I think I played about 75 of that, which I was impressed with. And then since that, I've been playing a little bit more. So yeah, I didn't play for a long time. And then for the last year and a half, 2 years, I've been playing a little bit more. But it's just time. Like to find a group of guys that we play with regularly, I just can never commit to a regular slot, a regular allocation. And I'm, I don't want to let anyone down. So I don't want to commit and then not show up.
There's a slot available as goalkeeper in our five-a-side team, Joshua.
Oh, really?
Whenever you want.
We can talk about that.
But how do you, look fit. You look fit and well. And obviously you like to skateboard. What's a typical week look like for you? And maybe talk a little bit about your nutrition as well.
Yeah, I just started 8 weeks ago with a personal trainer. So the first time I've ever had a personal trainer, and I'm actually completely obsessed with it. I never thought I was going to be the gym guy. In fact, I kind of like teased my other friends for several years who had like regular training, and they're always posting Instagram stories in the gym at 6 a.m. I'm always like, yeah, nice one. Yeah, good. And now I'm that guy. Like I've turned into that guy and I love it. I guess I'm really competitive and I like goals and I like targets. And obviously I like aesthetic because I'm always tailoring myself. But I've always been slim, but never that strong, I guess. Not since I finished playing football. And I don't know, I just had a sort of a bit of a change about 9-10 weeks ago where I just wanted to feel better. And I wanted to feel better inside myself, if that makes sense. And I just sort of, I met my trainer now, a chap called Luke, a really, really lovely chap, through a really good customer of mine, actually. A good customer of mine organized some hospitality. So we all went out together. And kind of my experience with personal trainers was never very good because when we used to train and play football, we would literally train until we were physically sick doing hill runs and stair runs. And being shouted at in my mid to late 30s I'm used to being the boss, so I'm not used to being told what to do. So I always poo-pooed the idea, right? Like I didn't want to do it. And I met this chap and he was so lovely. And he just said, hey, like, just come for a session. Like we can talk about it. And I was explaining, like I had a lot of old, like niggly injuries, like Achilles and like my ankle was, I'd rolled it skateboarding, when it's like blows up. And I've done that several times. So it didn't have much flexibility in my left ankle. And he said like, that's all stuff we can work on. We can work on training it. We can work on like extending its flexibility. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, like that feels like it has purpose. I'm not just running. And my naive head, like going to the gym with a trainer was just running on a running machine. But obviously it's so much more. And I've learned loads in the last 9 weeks, so much about my body and what I do to it and how to counter it and how I can better it. And very, very strangely, I found myself designing differently in the last 9 weeks because my mental headspace has changed so much from just the training that I've been doing with him. It's really changed like a lot of different outcomes from me. It's without sort of exaggerating, it does feel like a borderline revelation for me. And I can see why people just feel good about themselves for training. And I can see why people get really obsessed with it.
Yes.
I'm absolutely loving it in short.
Well expressed. And it's true, isn't it? Training with a trainer, you're training with structure. They're taking a preventive approach, looking at the whole person. And all you have to do is just turn up, and with a very good trainer, which you know, makes the world of difference in your results that you achieve.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I actually couldn't believe how quickly the transformation began as well. So he wanted to train three times a week, but I don't even have anything to do three times a week. No, I don't have three times a week at slots. But so we're doing once a week, and I'm doing two. He's given me like some home exercises to do twice a week to kind of keep a consistent regime, let's say. And that's been, I've been really enjoying the home workouts too. I really love it. I've got like a, bought an exercise mat home, so I'm not on the carpet. Just doing just some ground work and just some general strength things, and trying to build up my upper body, and really just turning some fat to muscle, really. I've been the same measurements for 20 years since I was 17. The first ever suit I made was 17, and it still fits. I don't wear it, but I've not changed shape, but I don't necessarily want to now, because I definitely couldn't afford to alter my entire wardrobe to get any bigger. But yeah, turning fat to muscle and just being more toned, leaner and stronger is something that is the goal, basically. That's what I said to him when we started.
Very good. And of course, there are mental benefits, mental well-being benefits as well. Do you feel more positive as a result, more energized?
Hugely. And it's so weird to say that I feel more confident, because I'm a very confident person. And I've always been confident in my suit. But it's strange that I feel more confident or more comfortable with myself. And having that, and it's like a weird thing I look forward to at the end of each week as well. I usually train on Thursday afternoon or Friday lunch with him. And it's so nice to have that to look forward to. And it's so nice that if I've had one too many espresso martinis in the week, that I feel I can counter that by knowing that I'm going to be working out regularly and having that slot. So I don't feel sort of the guilt for, having a few too many drinks or staying up on too many late nights. Mm.
And what about your, not only espresso martinis, but your intake generally, nutrition-wise?
Yeah, I mean, that's changed a lot too. Honestly, that's changed a lot through his counsel and through his suggestion. And I've really taken on board his suggestions. I haven't eaten meat since I was, about 21, so quite a long time. But I love fish, and Japanese is my favorite food. So lots of, I used to eat a lot of pizza, which is bad. That used to be my favorite food, but I'm really trying to cut that out, because not that I don't love it, but I just feel like eating healthy and training, like it just feels like I need to do it. Like I'm very obsessive compulsive. When I start doing it, I'll be really, really strict with myself. So I'm eating a lot of fish, a lot of sushi, a lot of rice dishes, like hot rice dish, like Japanese hot rice dishes that I am unfortunately not experienced in the kitchen whatsoever when it comes to making food. So unfortunately it is an Uber Eats 7 days a week. But I also, that comes down to time as well. I work late every day I'm in the office. So it's kind of like, I'll leave the office at, anywhere between 8 to 11 p.m. and it's just kind of ordering food on the way home, having it ready for when I get back, or eating in the office. But eating a lot of fish and a lot of rice and a lot of vegetables is kind of the name of the game at the moment.
Well, if you like Japanese cuisine, consider yourself invited to the Arts Club. QB, the Japanese restaurant there, is outstanding.
Oh,
okay,
thank you.
And you do work in a very demanding industry. How do you best relax and unwind at the end of it all, apart from espresso martinis?
Apart from espresso martini, I would say that comes back down to skateboarding or spending time with my friends. I always find like my friends are all doing really amazing, interesting, exciting stuff. And I find that spending time with them is really, really creative for me. I kind of like muse off a lot of my friends. And when I talk to them and hear what they're doing, like, it gets my brain going and just keeps me like really, really in tune and really excited.
Very good. And what's the future hold for Joshua Kane Store?
I started a video game company about a year and a half ago. So I've been creating my own video game for, probably nearly 2 years, but it's been in solid production for the last 15 months. And that's a very, very exciting project. it's basically like I wrote like three movies worth of storyline for characters that I created. And I'm creating like a single player open world video game that tells the story of characters that are featured in my runway show. So it's a whole universe of storytelling and world building. And it's a really fun way that a younger audience and someone that can't necessarily afford £2,500 on a bespoke suit can still live the aesthetic of my brand and still live the stories and still enjoy it over and over again. And I think that's like the long and the short of it, but there's also like, there's so much that's going to come with that. There's a whole digital tailoring world that I'm creating, which is one-to-one digitally stitched versions of my real life garments that are going to create digital pieces of art and featuring all manner of exciting things.
I don't think the creative part of your brain ever switches off.
It's actually overpowered the normal side. It's on overdrive all day long.
That's fantastic. To round off, what advice would you, life advice would you like to leave our listeners with, you know, in terms of how you live your life and your approach to life generally?
There's so many different things. I think two things that I always find really key is to something I learned at university and something I still do now. I was never the best designer in my class at university. I graduated with the first, but when I started in the first year, I was one of the weakest students. And it wasn't that I wasn't good at it. I just wasn't very good at sort of following briefs and all that. And I just very headstrong. But what I found is just by working harder than everyone else in that room, that it allowed me to overtake everyone and it allowed me to sort of surpass people. And that was just with real hard work and determination. And it sort of goes without saying that obviously hard work gets you places, but having that determination and that will and that drive to work harder than everyone else in that room is really probably the reason that I'm sat in this store now and I've managed to make a reputation for myself. And that's really, and it's really just down to hard work, drive, enthusiasm, and making great relationships.
Well, great way to end the podcast. And thanks for being so open and honest. It's been fascinating listening to your story. And happy birthday for tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward to arranging an appointment online.
Yeah. I look forward to holding up the sticks for your five-a-side team.
Yes, exactly. Consider that done. Okay, Joshua, all the best. Thank you very much. And we'll speak again soon.